Hi, it's Tracy. Before we start, I have a request. Okay, it's a little weird, maybe even a lot weird, but hello, 6.5 million downloads on my podcast, and still we haven't chosen a sponsor, right? Yeah, they just haven't been good enough for us, and that's a little weird too. So I decided I'm going to treat this like a sponsorship spot. Many of you know Marcus, my son, who's been the inspiration behind this podcast, the book, my programs, anything at all to do with ADHD. Well, he is graduating from NYU this May, and boy, are we happy that he did it in 4 years. So anyway, Marcus loves to travel, and so he's spending 6 weeks by himself traveling to 5 countries in South America. I don't know about you, but there's no way in hell that I would go to even one country alone. And so we gave Marcus a very low budget. This trip is a combination of his birthday and graduation gift, and he figured it all out himself. He speaks some Spanish, but he hired a Spanish tutor from Ecuador a couple weeks ago, months maybe, who's a professor at a university there, and this professor is helping him with his conversational Spanish. Marcus also changed his phone to Spanish only and all of his apps, and he only watches Spanish TV in preparation for this trip. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what Marcus is like. Now, Marcus would ultimately like to earn a PhD in psychology. He's fascinated by the brain, learning differences, and particularly how dyslexia impacts math. For the near future, though, he wants to work for a couple of years in New York City. I never thought he'd say that. He was always looking for more nature. So anyway, he's going on this trip, and what he's trying to do is find a job that he can come back to. He's come very close, but still no cigar. So yes, I am hawking my son's skills on these airwaves. He thinks I'm insane. But I'm like, who knows what interesting people are out there? I mean, I found my husband in a personal ad when no one was doing that. So why not find a job using my podcast? I mean, ultimately, finding a partner or finding a job, it's all the same thing, right? It's marketing, just getting the word out. Right job, right person. So that's my weird request. If you have any leads in New York City, Marcus would love to work in advertising or marketing sales. He's a phenomenal researcher. I promise you, he can find anything. He's very skilled in Excel and financial modeling. He'd be amazing in digital advertising or tech marketing. And beyond his hard skills, he's resilient. He's so smart. And he has an exceptional work ethic. And that's not just his mother talking. He's not like me. He prefers not to challenge the status quo all the time. He actually likes structure and systems. And he has so many ideas about how to make things better, faster, more efficient, simpler. So I'm putting this out there to our incredible community. If you know of any opportunities in digital advertising, tech marketing, or sales that are in New York City and could benefit from a bright, hardworking, and respectful young professional like my son Marcus, send me an email at support@tracyoutsuka.com and I will connect the two of you. Look, Marcus represents the very essence of what we talk about here every week, right? The brilliance of thinking differently. And so does his mother. So thank you for letting me be weird. And now let's get on with the show.
Richard Branson, Michael Phelps, Justin Timberlake, James Carville. Wait a minute. Where are the women? Greta Gerwig, Lisa Ling, Audra McDonald, Simone Biles. That sounds like a list of highly successful titans in a variety of industries. They all have ADHD, but you don't hear much about that now, do you? You know what else you don't hear about? Are the 43% of people with ADHD who are in excellent mental health. Why aren't we talking about them and what they're doing right? I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka, and that's exactly what we do here. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, a lifelong student, and now the author of my new book, ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. I'm also a certified ADHD coach and the creator of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, a patented system that helps ADHD women just like you get unstuck and fall in love with their brilliant brains. Here, we embrace our too muchness and we focus on our strengths. My guests and I credit our ADHD for some of our greatest gifts. And to those who still think they're too much, too impulsive, too scattered, too disorganized, I say, no one ever made a difference by being too little.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. Thank you so much for joining me here for another episode of ADHD for Smart Ass Women. Before we start, I just want to remind you that you may find my new book with HarperCollins William Morrow, also called ADHD for Smart Ass Women, wherever you buy your books. It's a compilation of all of our learnings here on this podcast. If you'd like more information, go to ADHDforSmartWomen.com. So now, on to the podcast, because you know that my purpose is always to show you who you are and then inspire you to be it. In the thousands of ADHD women that I've had the privilege of meeting, I've never met a one that wasn't truly brilliant at something, not one. So for all of these reasons, I am absolutely delighted to introduce you to Stephanie Sorrentino Mulholland. Stephanie Sorrentino Mulholland is a pediatric speech-language pathologist based in the Chicagoland area. As a neurodivergent individual herself, Stephanie brings a unique perspective to her work as a speech-language pathologist. Currently, Stephanie serves as a key member of the community outreach team at a leading pediatric therapy company. In addition, she shares her expertise as an adjunct professor at St. Xavier University, where she empowers the next generation of professionals in the field. Driven by her own journey with ADHD and autism, Stephanie recently launched her own practice called Bite-Sized Beginnings, where she provides specialized feeding and language supports to neurodivergent children and adults. Outside of work, Stephanie enjoys time with her husband, Trent, and their two dachshunds, Rizzo and Pasquale. Stephanie, welcome. Did I get all of that right?
You did. Thank you so much, Tracy.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you here. And I just want to let our audience know that I called her. And so I reached out to her via phone like at 9:10, because in my brain, I've got a 9 a.m. podcast because that's usually when I record. And of course, it wasn't 9 a.m. I pick up the phone. She's like, wait, isn't it like in an hour? So I checked my calendar. And of course, I was wrong yet again. Whenever it comes to time, I'm always wrong. But we made it and we're here. Well, not this time. This time it was me, right?
Right.
So I got everything right?
Yes. I'm a little starstruck because for the last like year and a half, you have been blasting from my radio stereo as I've been driving around Chicagoland. I'm in the car quite a bit. And, you know, I just love all the experts you've had on the podcast. And of course, I pre-ordered your book and I listened to it through audio. Oh, yeah. And I don't consider myself quite done with it yet. I like to re-listen. So it's been amazing.
Oh, gosh. Wonderful. Well, I love to hear that. And thank you so much for supporting the book.
Of course.
It makes such a difference. You need to write a review, though.
Oh, I will.
Okay. On Amazon. And what was the other one? On Goodreads. Please. And listeners, please. We need the reviews. They really, really make a difference. So if you haven't done that yet, I would really appreciate it. Okay. So obviously, we want to talk about what it is that you do. But since you've listened to the podcast regularly, you know how we always start. I want to know about your ADHD journey. Like, how were you diagnosed?
Absolutely. So I was diagnosed around 25 in graduate school at Eastern Illinois University. And I was sitting in my graduate class and there was a PowerPoint slide about ADHD. And I checked every box. And there is nothing more humbling than studying disorders and realizing you might have one. And so the interesting thing was how empowering it was for me to see you know, the reasons why maybe things were challenging for me. It released a lot of internalized shame. Of course, I've had to work on that, and it manifests in various ways, especially in women, but that's kind of how it got going. I was very, very fortunate to have really great supportive professors.
You know what is crazy to me, though? I think this is the first guest I have had on this podcast who has told me they were diagnosed in grad school where they were studying the brain or some aspect of the brain, and they were actually taught about it. And that's what triggered this idea that, oh my gosh, I think I have this. Now, Ned Halliwell, that was his story too. But it's very rare that I hear this, which is why we're always told, oh, I mean, I've spoken to so many medical doctors, of course, psychiatrists, therapists, like people that are in this profession. And for years, they even treated people with ADHD and they still didn't get that connection. So I suspect that your symptoms are very stereotypical hyperactive boy kind of symptoms, or no?
No, actually, not at all. And I love that.
I'm impressed
you said
with that school.
I mean, at times, you know, I have the combined type. But okay. When I was very young, when I was much younger, you know, my mom would always say to me, and sorry, mom, but she knows I say this, would always say to me, you were such a good kid. You're such a good kid. I'm like, mom, please stop saying that. I was masking all the time. I was masking. It was so challenging for me to truly open up to people because I always felt like I was going to be judged. So I was very hypervigilant when I was young. And as I kind of grew into who I was and really the drive I had to succeed, I didn't care what it took. Yeah. I mean, obviously I made it to grad school. I didn't care what it took. I would do it. But that's what leads so many of us to burnout.
Mm-hmm. So it was the drivenness. So you definitely had that hyperactive drivenness, really ambitious, but you had to do all kinds of things that typical brains didn't have to do to make sure that you got the grades and were able to keep going.
Exactly. And I'm going to give a really vulnerable example of this.
Yeah.
That I just want to share because it really matches up with how intelligence is not a factor with ADHD. Yeah. Yeah. So on my ACT or on any standardized tests, it was so overwhelming for me that oftentimes I would make it through the first half and then I was just exhausted and I would fill in the bubbles. I would just straight up fill in the bubbles.
Meaning you'd guess.
Oh, yeah. I would
once you got past the halfway point.
Exactly. I could not take it anymore. And I haven't told that to very many people. And we'll get into this a little bit more. There was a lot of reading demand. There was a lot of internal inattention. So we don't talk about the internal side of attention deficit enough. And I do think that presents much more in women. And so, I mean, these were timed tests. And I would be focusing on someone rolling their pencil or just how silent it was in the room. And then I would end up reading these paragraphs, I swear, 5 to 10 times. And it got to be, I mean, that's where the exhaustion came from. And that's why I buy everything on audio now, everything. And I also like to have a hard copy and I like to make notes because that's what makes it more meaningful. But we have to remember too, reading and writing it's a modality of language. So we need to have attention to attach meaning, which you do talk about in your book. And I was so happy to hear it. You have to have attention to really attach meaning to the words and phrases that you hear or read.
Yeah. And not everybody learns best by reading. Some of us can't learn at all by reading, right? I just saw something. I don't know if it was, I think it was on Instagram, and it was a company that was advertising one of those text-to-speech apps where you can throw in a PDF, and it was geared towards students. You can throw in a PDF, and then it puts it into like an Audible, right? And so it reads it for you. And it uses AI.
Yeah.
And someone posted, well, that's a great way for students never to learn anything and just rant, rant, rant. And I just couldn't help myself. I had to respond that, assuming that that's how the student best learns and can actually learn through the written word, right?
Right.
So I don't know if she responded, but I couldn't help myself because it was just so ignorant.
Well,
like, there's only one way to learn, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So you're sitting in this grad school class and suddenly they talk about ADHD. Light bulb goes off. I love the fact that you did not then revert to, you know, shame and, oh my God, and I'm disordered and defective. But it was actually, I hate this word, but empowering, maybe the better word is inspiring to you. So where did that come from?
It's just, I feel like it was validating is what it was. There are other people out there that might feel the same way as me, that might also experience these challenges. And I have to give a shout out to one particular professor that I will say she inspired me to really take action and find what I needed surrounding a diagnosis. And she never told me, you know, her name's Jill Fay. She is an expert in executive functions. She speaks all over the world all about it. And, you know, she gave me the look. I was like, I have ADHD, don't I? And she was like, go get tested. I couldn't really read her, but I was like, I'm going to go. I will take that as a sign.
Did she know you and had she been around you you know, before that?
Okay. Oh, yes.
Okay, so she probably could see the signs.
Oh, absolutely. And I loved her classes because she is an expert and she could just articulate in a way that I understood so well, so much so that I kind of, you know, I have like a lot of books she's written. She does a great job of really recognizing how people have different learning styles. For me, something that's super helpful is having an outline or a schedule or the skeleton of how things work. Not because, not because I'm a control freak.
Well, it's because, that too, right?
Well, maybe, but we don't have to talk about that part. It's because I need to be able to reference those main ideas in order to totally process them. And when I don't have access to the outline, the main ideas, those bullet points, visuals, what happens is my mind takes me in a million different places. And that's very, very common for language processing disorder, which is in high comorbidity with ADHD.
Yeah. And I think it is just how our ADHD brains work. We are big picture people, right? So if you give us the big picture, then we can calm down and we can start focusing on the little bits. But if we just have all these little bits, we're trying to put them together the whole time into the big picture. So we can't focus on the little bits.
Absolutely.
Is that how your brain works?
Well, yeah. So yes, but also oftentimes I will get stuck in the weeds. Someone's talking to me and I will pick up on one detail and it's like the car's driving on the highway and it veers off this exit. It veers off the other exit. And I miss bits and pieces of that message, which is why I'm like, I need an outline. I need an outline because it helps my brain go back to the main idea. And that is so common with ADHD brains. And there are certain language prompts you can use for yourself. Like I talk to myself constantly. That will keep you on track. So
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, because we have these, like, ideation is like, you know, our biggest strength. Wouldn't it make sense that no matter what idea we're given, we're coming up with more ideas, right? And so Absolutely. If you're going down the wrong route, ultimately you may end up in a better place. But when it comes to education and learning, it's just a much harder way for us to learn because we don't know what the big picture is. So if you give us the big picture, we know. It's like when someone asks me, this happened recently. It was for a speaking thing. Okay, everybody's going to meet in groups. Everybody meets in groups. So we talk, and then we all get together, and it's like, okay, so I'm going to ask everybody this question. I'm like, I don't know what the answer is because I wasn't focused on that question. I was focused on being in the experience with the other person and, you know, the emotion and discovering who they are and trying to find commonality and wanting to like them, like all of that. So I don't know. I didn't even know what she spoke on, to be honest. I just knew I was interested in her and they wanted all this, you know, backside information about, okay, exactly what is it that she speaks on? I'm like, I can't remember. I mean, I had a general idea and that's why I liked her, but I didn't know the specifics at all. So you can see why a typical brain would see that and probably think, oh my God, she doesn't pay attention. She's not very smart. Exactly. When in fact, what I came away with was so much more because I was focused on everything rather than just the, you know, what everybody, and that's the thing with focus, right? If we are really linear brained, we already know what we expect. And so we focus on things in a line. We see only what we are expecting to see versus our brains. We don't know what to expect and we're always open to more. So really that's where the creativity comes from.
Absolutely. And I love what you said about when you're separated into groups and you are trying to authentically connect, because that is an ADHD strength. When I work with kids, there's a reason why they open up to me, and it's because I put the relationship first. I show them my vulnerabilities. And when you do that, you can overcome that shame, the fear, and you can get to a place where you can learn and really say, I've struggled with this. And it's so important. Too often, we associate somebody's communication skills with their intelligence, which is why I love being a speech language pathologist. It is my passion in life. You know, often kids will get a label kind of slapped on them, and then we give them an augmentative alternative communication device, and they are able to tell you all the things were wrong, you know? And it's just, that's why communication is so important.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so let's go back. I'm still not getting the answers here because we keep going off on these tangents. You're sitting in this class. You decide you're going to go get diagnosed, or your professor says, maybe you should get diagnosed. You're like, okay, I'm going to go get diagnosed. So did you have the experience that most women have where they have to go through 3.2 different practitioners to finally get a accurate diagnosis, or were you one of the lucky ones? How did all of that work?
So maybe in the beginning I was lucky, but at the same time, I am a very persistent patient. I wanted to vet out anybody that I was going to go see. I also made sure I had access to people that specialized in that who could make a good recommendation. And that is a direct result of my education, which is a privilege. So I recognize that.
Yes.
I was diagnosed on my first testing appointment, and he said, but also, you have a very high anxiety level. Of course, high anxiety, ADHD, and I think that inattentiveness is also a challenge. So,
okay.
I started medication. Lots and lots of people say, when I had medication for ADHD, it was like everything quieted down. That is not my experience. That's not my
Probably
experience.
Probably because of the high anxiety, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to go into language processing disorder once we get through this, because I'm really fascinated
by that. And I'm okay. So you're diagnosed with high anxiety, ADHD, and inattentive ADHD, right?
Right.
Although you're a combined type. So you're in your head a lot. So what did you do next? So you get a prescription, you decide to try medication. And what does it do? It doesn't do so well. It exacerbates the anxiety.
No, it did help. And I was in graduate school. So you have to keep in mind, it was already high anxiety, no matter what I was going to do. It definitely helped. I think that with language processing and ADHD and trying all these new things and learning about how you learn, you start to realize the differences that you need to really learn. So here's a great example. In graduate school, we would have PowerPoints that were like 100 slides. And just that visual overwhelm, I would gather every piece of information I could. I call them writer downers. If there was a quote that a professor said that really struck me, I would write it down. Yes, I have a whole list of Tracy writer downers. I'll have to send it to you.
I'd love them, actually.
Yes, you'll love them. And I forgot what I was talking about.
Oh my gosh, what were you talking about? And it was really good. It was about in college that you learned that, you know, you just learned differently.
Got it. Yeah. So the 100 slide PowerPoints would overwhelm me. And so what I ended up doing was taking all of that and getting it on one single piece of paper. And I would put it in boxes and outlines. And then what would happen is I would rewrite it, of course, because I'm a perfectionist. And if it wasn't pretty enough, I would rewrite it and rewrite it and rewrite it. And I would relearn it constantly. And once I figured out that strategy, I was totally able to make sense and start applying information. When I started to learn about language processing, it really helped me, especially early on in my career. And I went to school with the experts in the field. I was very lucky. Dr. Gail Richard I got to learn from the best. And just to give a little bit more insight about language processing disorder and also language versus auditory processing disorder, which you did talk about in your book, because that gets confused all the time. And they are two different distinct disorders. They do overlap, though. And so to start with auditory processing
disorder. And different from audio processing disorder, right?
There's so many things. Yes. And I'll focus on auditory and language because I want to make it make sense for everyone. With auditory processing disorder, there are breakdowns in the auditory memory, auditory sound localization, auditory attention, just those little, just receiving a message is much more difficult to attach meaning to the language. It does not mean that you have a hearing impairment, which that's a huge misdiagnosis. It does not mean that you have
another disorder.
Yeah. It means that maybe you need to amplify the sound so you can better attach meaning to it and also attend to it. So then the overlap between the two is when we start attaching and creating words from those sounds and noises that we hear. And so now we're getting into language processing. I always explain this, like if you've had a really, really long day and someone is giving you multi-step directions and you're really trying hard to focus on them, they're talking to you and it's like deer in the headlights for you. You are not making sense of what they're saying. You can hear them. You hear their message. And you're like, wait, say that again. And that's the difficulty with language processing. And like we touched on before, if you're not attentive to the information coming in at you, it's going to be really hard to make the main idea or get to the point of the message from a comprehension standpoint.
So I am wondering, as I hear you speak, if with ADHD and inattention, do we all have somewhat of a language processing disorder? Because it's kind of like, you know, what's the cartoon with the dog, you know, and the person is saying, okay, sit down, speak, whatever. And the dog is like, yeah. Wah, 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 you know, it's like they hear the sound, they hear the noise, but it's just not registering.
It's just not and registering.
I feel like that sometimes when I'm talking to people, if I get distracted where they're just kind of talking and I'm trying to pay attention, but I can't, it's just like it's not going in my brain.
Right. Well, and that makes sense, bringing it back to the attention piece. And I think that's why it's so important. It's so critical to get the early diagnosis, because as we're building our foundation of language, if you don't fill in those holes, you're gonna have a, what Dr. Richard says, is a Swiss cheese pattern of development. And so we are the kids that fall through the cracks very often. We're borderline. We're A for effort kids and poor test takers. And so I think maybe all of us might have some sort of processing. I don't like to say disorder. I think we can all find
difference. Yeah.
Difference, just it, and it might not be impacting you all the time. That's another thing to keep in mind as well. I like to give the example about, this comes from Mrs. Fay, so I can't take full credit for this idea, but also I've adapted it over the years after working with so many people who are ADHDers, and there's a part of our brain called the angular gyrus, and we call it our word closet. In our word closet, as a neurotypical brain, the words or clothes might be really organized. Maybe they're color-coded. Maybe they're in, I don't know, they're put in groups of seasons. Maybe they have clothes they don't wear a lot, but they can easily find them and take them out of their closet. For an ADHD brain, we like to have the clothes that we love front and center. Maybe they're still in the laundry bin, not folded, but they're in front of our closet. We want to be able to grab the vocabulary, the topics, the things that we love the most, and have them easily accessible to us. Also, we might leave some clothes on the floor, like thing, words like thing, stuff, and those are easily accessible. And so I explain that word closet analogy to a lot of kids because we can guess both figuratively and literally that our closets are a mess sometimes. And so that's how I explain attaching meaning with language in a language processing sense. And to take that a step further, once we find those words, we put them on our thought highway. And I say this, I have to laugh because I teach this a lot of times to middle schoolers who are really, really impulsive with their words. And I say, today you are in a Ferrari and I need you to be in like a very reliable Toyota. Like if we go too fast, we're gonna crash. We are gonna let these words just come on out and we're not gonna stop and think. And so I say, on your thought highway, get into the right car, put your Ferrari in the garage, get on your thought highway and set up some quote unquote billboards for yourself. And we can use language to keep ourselves on track. We can use language. We can have a billboard that says, what am I supposed to be doing right now, Stephanie? What am I supposed to be doing right now, Tracy? Or what's the most important thing I need to be focusing on right now? Simple things like I'm not doing this, I'm doing this. And help ourselves slow down. And in your book, you said you're so grateful for the relationships that you've fostered over time with so many amazing women, and taking the time to really socially connect with people who mean something to you is essentially, you said, it's the best way for you to recharge and slow down. And the next time you are on a road trip on your thought highway, veer off and find a friend. My husband does that for me. He pulls me out of just that hyper focus. And we need to do that.
So it's the pausing, right? It's the, okay, we're going to pause and we're going to slow that Ferrari down.
Yes.
What is our intention? What's really important to us? You know, who are we in all of this? Our identity. And let's work on those things instead of getting so distracted by everything else that seems sparkly and interesting, because it's so easy, right, to grab for it and to go down that rabbit hole. That's easy for our brains. What's harder for our brains, I think, is to get back on the highway and get on the right, yes, you know, the right detour or whatever, the take the right exit.
Yes.
We just keep going fast, right?
Right. And, well, I will say, too, sometimes we can go really slow, too slow. We're not able to put everything together. We're going way too slow. And that's the inattentive side of ADHD. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we start something, we weren't paying attention, we got to do it over again. Or we're in a really important work meeting and we're not caught up with everybody else because we don't have that outline.
Yeah. Yeah. So then it would be, it really is about figuring out what our brain needs. And then in every instance, just constantly reinventing the wheel, knowing that, for example, the work meeting. Okay, y'all, I'm thinking about all kinds of other things that could really add to this, but I need to be able to step back and focus on exactly what it is that we've got going on here. And can we build an overview? So I make sure that, you know, I don't let my creative brain focus on things that maybe won't serve us for what we need right now. It's me again, Tracy. You know how people often assume that if you have ADHD, you're just lazy, unmotivated, and not living up to your full potential? Well, I'm here to tell you they've got it all wrong, except for the part about not reaching your full potential. But that's only because you haven't found the right strategies tailored for your unique ADHD brain. And that's exactly why I wrote ADHD for Smartass Women. This book, it's designed to help you understand the different approaches that work for your distinct brain, inspiring you to become the best version of yourself right now. You can grab a copy wherever books are sold. And if you've already read my book, please take a moment to leave a review on Amazon and Goodreads. Your feedback, it not only supports me and my publisher, but it also helps other smart-ass women and their kids, friends, and colleagues find the strategies they need to thrive. Every review makes a huge difference. So go write a review now or buy the book now before you forget. Okay, back to our usual programming.
Right. And that's why agendas, please, if you're an employer and you're neurotypical, agendas keep people on track. And people are often surprised that I'm a little bit rigid about that. And I don't mean to be, but my work means so much to me. When you have ADHD, you're passionate about the things that you're involved in. You want to get it right. You want to do well. You want to be prepared. And also, I would ask that on that agenda, there's room for creativity, because you know, we will open up and push it further. We will innovate.
Yeah.
We will ask why. We will ask why not. And so if you're inviting us to those meetings, be ready.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't know about you, but for my brain, I hate meetings anyway. And so if I feel like we're all just there talking about nothing and it just seems like a big time wasting suck, yes. I just get upset, right? Like I don't want to be there and then I shut down even more. So right. If there's an agenda, then you can at least have the tools to, okay, if we're getting too, let's say they're getting too sidetracked and not focusing on what it is that we want to, you know, the end result, what we hope to accomplish by the end of this meeting, right. That you can go back to the agenda and say, wait a minute, you know, we need to go back to this.
Right. So and with no shame. So that's mm-hmm. the part where I think we really need to think about language. A lot of times ADHDers get corrected in, I just want to focus you. You need to be focused. I need you to stay on track. I need you, if you would just focus. And it's like, well, yeah. I'm trying. And that elicits yeah. some shame. And so having an outline, bringing it back, right? We talked about being in the weeds, bringing it back to what is that main idea? You know, sometimes a really great strategy I use is I imagine myself, I don't know why, but I imagine myself holding an apple. My apple is the main idea. If I don't have an outline and there might be all these topics that I want to talk about, but I'm holding the apple. If I'm really struggling to express myself, I'm holding the apple and each one of my fingers has a main idea attached to it. And it's just a nice way to visualize what I want to talk about. And I love that might be helpful to some of you.
I love that. Okay, I'm bringing you back to the beginning again because we still haven't flushed that out. So you get diagnosed, you try medication. It works really well or no?
I had to try a couple different medications. And also talk therapy. And I am a huge, huge advocate for talk therapy. Shout out to Anna, my therapist. What it does, though, is, you know, we are verbal processors a lot of times. Mm-hmm. It's important for us to talk things through before we go pitch an idea. Or if mm-hmm. we really, really yeah. want to be heard and understood. We need to say it out loud and attach meaning to the words that we are saying. Mm-hmm. And so talk therapy has helped me so much. It's critical. We need to redirect our thoughts.
The thought part of it that you were really struggling with, the emotion of ADHD?
Yes, I would say yes. And just the disorganization that comes with trying to make sense of our really complicated world. And then mm-hmm. once you start to learn about, you know, I think of, everyone says emotions, dopamine. I think of ADHD as very, very neurological. I think of autism as very, very neurological. I look at it as if maybe there's a portion of our brain that's not, we're not accessing as everyone else might. And so those compensatory strategies that you might use, they can help strengthen and give you new neurons, synapses in that area of the brain. So as we discuss this and we talk about it, it's hard for me to really remember what it used to be like, which is great, right? That's really exciting. It's great to look back on that and say, wow, look at how far I've come. But I think it's really important for women, especially, to reflect on the things that kind of drive them nuts about ADHD and work on them. There is no shame in it. Not at all.
So are you saying that the talk therapy gave you so much more awareness around what you'd been through and what was even like what even bothered you and what bothers you now? And what are the things that I don't want it to be like that anymore?
Right.
And the connection that ADHD was probably responsible for a lot of it.
A lot.
How you felt about it. Yeah. Okay.
And we internalize so much shame. So much shame as women. And talk therapy helps you because you have somebody redirecting and also validating your thoughts. That's why I love quotes. I have quotes all over. This quote reminds me of you. Can I read it? It's one of my favorite quotes. It's by Octavia Butler. And it's, she was too alert, too alive, not to have the kind of mind that probed and reached and got her into trouble now and then. And it's okay to mess up. It's okay to feel insecure about what you're going through when you have ADHD. But also know it's okay to advocate for yourself and find, groups of people and podcasts like this that can really empower you to figure out your own brain.
So it almost sounds like, and I really believe this. I believe our best purposes give meaning to our past. So it was almost like being diagnosed opened up this whole world where you suddenly had an awareness of why you behave the way you do, and not good or bad, but just why your brain works the way it does. And then you could build your own workarounds.
Yes.
So I'm curious, you, at the beginning, you said you were diagnosed with, or maybe did I say it? I think you said it, ADHD and autism, as well as, anxiety and all of that. So when did the autism come in?
Very recently, actually. And I know you had Dr. Neff on your podcast. I love her so much. She talks a lot about autistic traits. And I would say that I have more of the autistic traits. And I think some of the social, sometimes I'm a little on the slower end to read social cues, or if I don't feel comfortable, I will mask. And a lot of people who really know me laughed at me when I said I had autistic traits. And I'm like, well, there's a reason why I can hang out with anyone. And it's because a lot of autistics spent their whole life masking. And it's so sad. It's so exhausting. And I still do it. But I think it's really important to talk about it because it's a neurotype. Mm-hmm. There are so many more people out there that think this way. And when we pathologize it, it's tough.
So can you give us an example of what you're talking about as far as, autistic traits that you were and how you were masking?
Yeah. So a big autistic trait I had was the sensory, auditory overwhelm with high pitched noises. If I was feeling very irritable or if I was like exhausted after a day, my husband loves politics and he will watch them. And that was the biggest trigger for me. Politics is in my crawl space, not even my closet. So some of those things like auditory and then sensory processing or just even sensory organization of my body, the things I need to regulate myself and focus myself from a sensory standpoint are really challenging. Once I kind of stopped always reaching for medication or coffee or the ways we kind of self-medicate and also still sleep on those things, right? We can go right to bed. But I started using exercise and input to really help manage those autistic traits and make them work for me because they were who they are who I am. And when I kind of explored more with my autistic traits, what I really saw and felt, I just felt for that child that I was. And one of my other favorite quotes is that I practice by is be who you needed when you were younger. I don't know who said it, but I practice by that every day. Yes. Just very sensory. I'm a picky eater. I hate using the word picky, but I like to use selective.
Yeah.
It doesn't,
you know what you like.
Yep. I still eat chicken nuggets.
So that's a great segue. Please don't eat those. unless they're the healthy kind that aren't fried. So that's a great segue to what it is that you do.
Yes.
So you're a speech language pathologist, but then you're also a feeding therapist. I have never heard that term before. What the hell is a feeding therapist?
Okay. A feeding therapist, feeding and swallowing. We work with all different people who need help basically getting the food in your mouth, chewing it, swallowing it, making sure you're intaking food that you can sustain your hydration, nutrition. And I have to go back to your chicken nugget comment. Just remind me about that. Yeah, we're gonna circle back to that.
Food, okay.
Some autistics and ADHDers struggle to get a wide range of different foods. And so the recent research about this, though, has changed quite a bit. So it used to be more of a desensitization approach. We're going to work with you to basically try and get you to tolerate these foods. And what it really led to is a lot of masking and kids really feeling internalized experiences that they've learned to mute. Yeah. And so
it doesn't matter what they like, right?
Right. Exactly. And so part of my practice is really incorporating the sensory side. Like I get a sensory profile of everyone I work with so I can understand how they process the sensory information that they're getting from food. And another big part of my practice, especially with autistic children and adults that see me, is helping them understand what feels good for them. Mm-hmm. We spend so much time ignoring our body's cues. That's called interoception.
Yep.
I think Dr. Neff talked about it a little bit, and alexithymia. We spend so much time ignoring those cues, and then all of a sudden we're just listening to everybody else who's imposing their cues on us.
It's totally true. Okay, so let's say I'm a parent. I struggled with this a little bit with Marcus, who I also believe is on the spectrum based on testing and some other things, but has not been officially diagnosed, but he says it all the time. He was a very picky eater. Weirdly picky, though. He would eat sashimi, raw fish. He would eat a giant salad. But he had friends who ate a lot of junk food, like they would go to fast food stuff. And so that is what he started to want all the time. And I'm like, no. So when you talk about chicken nuggets, I'm like, you're not eating that. Sorry. But I will make you chicken nuggets. I know you won't like them as much, but they're chicken nuggets. They're just real food. So if a parent comes to you in that situation, I saw you go like this. So what would you say about if a kid, like all they want is, and I never took him to McDonald's. It was other, you know, families that took him there. So then all he wants is chicken nuggets. What would you do in that situation?
I would spend a lot of time working with those parents to understand that food is food. We have a diet culture in America that is so powerful that we forget.
Wait, are you really telling me that chicken nuggets is food? I mean, if you look at all the chemicals and crap in there, we're killing ourselves with that.
Well, you could look at it that way, but chicken nuggets, and it depends on the kind, right? We're not just saying that you enjoy chicken nuggets from McDonald's or, you know, there's high sodium, there's fried, there's a bunch of different ways you can enjoy chicken nuggets.
Okay, so you're not saying, oh yeah, just go let them eat fast food forever, kind of. You're not saying that at all. Okay.
Right. There is a reason why kids kind of gravitate towards that, and it's because it's predictable. You know, usually when you get chicken nuggets from McDonald's, they're the same way every time.
Yeah, that's so what they're known for.
The important thing to recognize, though, is when we feel threatened, and I mean threatened from a neurological safety standpoint, our appetite actually reduces. And so if a child only has three foods, and parents might be overwhelming them during their mealtime with more foods that really evoke that, oh, I can't handle this. My sensory system can't handle this. Their appetite is going to go down. And there's a risk for them dropping another food or going through food burnout. And so what we need to do is really look at those chicken nuggets, for example, and recognize that, well, chicken nuggets do have protein in them. The two biggest areas of deficit from a nutritional standpoint from autism, with autism, and I don't know if with ADHD, I'd have to get back to you on that, but with autism, it's protein and calcium. A lot of people are worried about vegetables and fruit, and all of those things are important. But really, protein and calcium are the drivers of what we need to grow. And so if we put that pressure on our kids to not eat their preferred foods, what happens is they feel threatened. They start to they start to lose or burn out on some of their favorite foods because they have no agency in deciding what goes in their body.
That makes so much sense. And especially with the ADHD brain, we can get very oppositional, right? Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to eat. I'm just going to dig in deeper. And I mean, I think about like he had some of these friends who literally all they ate was macaroni and cheese. And it wasn't, you know, like homemade. It was like crap macaroni and cheese with tons of sodium. And the child was really, really pale. And so if you have a kid who has three foods, and there are things like starch. I mean, you're right. At least the chicken nuggets, there's protein in them, right? Macaroni and cheese, not a whole lot of protein in that. And so if they're eating just literally food that is not sustaining them, where do you start? What do you do?
So you have to start by looking at the child's experience from a big picture standpoint. We're looking at how are they functioning in their common everyday environments. Are we activating their nervous system too much? I have so many kids that that will not eat at school, which is a big, big red flag to me. They will not touch anything at school. And so that's where you have to be really careful as a parent. There's so much parent shaming. I am so against parent shaming. One of my kids, she would only eat hot dog buns and some chocolate. And that was, you know, standing between us and a feeding tube. Okay. So like some of these kids,
we're creating disordered eating too.
Exactly.
In the middle of all this.
And there's a high correlation with anorexia, bulimia in autistic adults. And there's a reason why. Wow. And so at school, these kids wouldn't eat. It's a huge win if they eat a donut at school. I'm like, I don't care what you pack for them. take the shame around getting those nutritious foods in. And it really is thinking of a different way of doing therapy. So to circle back to what do you do to kind of give more variety? And that's, I stopped doing feeding therapy during mealtime. And think about it. Nobody wants to be told what to eat at their biggest meal of the day. Like, please don't. I hate seafood. I've learned to alter the texture so I can try it. I have come to lobster bisque. Only one of my family members is allowed to give it to me. Shout out Auntie Dawn. But
that is so funny.
Right. I've learned to try it, change the texture. But if you told me that was going to be my dinner and I had to taste it or even eat it, or I'd have someone pressuring me to try a shrimp, there's no way, no way that I would feel comfortable eating. Or worse, I would eat it and just absolutely mask and then maybe go, I mean, I'm not saying I would do this, but a lot of people do go throw up later.
Oh my gosh.
I know, so it's heavy.
This is so interesting though. I mean, it's fascinating because the thing that you said that just really hit home, we were on the other end of the spectrum. We had a lot of families that, you know, they lived at fast food and macaroni and cheese and all that. And our kids, you know, did more of, like, we always had salads and my husband's a total, and a lot of fish.
Yeah.
And so they would get shamed at school. Like if I showed up with sushi for lunch, you know, they'd be like, oh, well, that's not child food. That's adult food. And I'm like, well, you tell that to the people in Japan. It's cultural. It's all what you're raised with, right?
I love that you said it's cultural because that is a huge piece, huge, that even therapists miss, which is why we need to look at the whole picture. I mean, even as an adult, we have to look at the whole picture. There are some times where I just do not want to eat vegetables. Why do I? They're my favorite vegetables. Why? Why do I not want to eat them? And so I've learned, you know, just with my own body image and lots of therapy, that we need to stop placing judgment on food at all.
Yeah.
Stop commenting.
Well, because it comes back to exactly what you said, which is what we always talk about with ADHD is agency. Mm-hmm. Do what works for you. What is it that you want? And then how you connect that, which makes all the sense in the world, with our nervous system.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. You know, I'm thinking of that poor kid who's so stressed out because they know every mealtime is going to be a battle.
Yes.
And we are just making it so much worse.
Right.
That's brilliant. Really, really interesting. I love this conversation.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It is my hyperfixation. And also just challenging the way society places demands on us as neurodivergent individuals. We need to be we need to be skeptics. And while there's so much research and studies about the brain, the lived experience of what we go through day to day is just as important.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the deal too. I mean, I think when you take all of the neurodivergencies, we're probably 20% of the population. So if 20% of the population has a brain that operates in a certain way, how can that be a disorder? Why isn't that just a variation on normal, right? We're at different ends of the spectrum.
I agree with that. I just don't want to invalidate the struggles that we go through when we go and we want to seek help. However, I think that, you know, autism, the prevalence now is 1 in 36. Used to be like when I started my career 10, 11 years ago, I don't know, 1 in 60 something. It's 1 in 36 now.
Yep.
And so when we think about going to school and we're going to have more autistic kids than ever, and we need to start adapting to the way we learn. And so you're right. It is a difference. However, like I still get frustrated with myself when I experience some of the challenges that I do. And I think many other autistics might also feel that way. And so I go back and forth with, like, I don't want to pathologize it, but I also want to make sure that we're affirming our own experiences and we're able to self-advocate and ask for help because we will need it.
However, if we stop apologizing for it and start figuring out what works for us, right? Because the only reason we feel that way and we're doing all that masking is because we feel like there's something wrong.
Exactly.
And I just get away from that something wrong and instead change it with something different. And different
totally
is good.
Right.
We need all kinds of brains, right?
Yes, you're right. And I agree with that. I think I should have prefaced with, like, I'm still going through the autism journey and what that means for me. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some really great resources out there. They can measure your masking. EmbraceAutism.org, I think. .com.org, not sure which one. But they have some screeners and tools that you can take that will help and give you insight as to what your neurotype might be. And I'm so fortunate to be surrounded by a whole community of professionals that love exploring this every day. So I would say I'm self-diagnosed with, you know, some consulting from amazing people in my life. But don't be afraid to explore your brain and continue to learn. And I love from your perspective, Tracy, because you came at it from a parent perspective and self-exploration. Mm-hmm. And that's very powerful because we're at the point now where we find out about these diagnoses from our kids getting diagnosed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, part of that too is when doctors, clinicians, whomever, when they're not listening, when they haven't listened to, frankly, women in general, right? Mm-hmm. Women's bodies, they're just ignored.
Right.
I think it takes the actual women who are experiencing the symptoms, because again, the symptoms are inside of ourselves. They can't see them.
Right.
It takes us saying, wait a minute, no, we're not taking this anymore, right?
Yes.
It's not in our head, you know?
Correct.
It's not just because of hormones and, you know, all of that.
Right. You're not over emotional.
No. Yeah. That one, give me a break. I'm so tired of that.
Yes.
How many more studies do we need that is not true, right? That's just pure sexism.
Yes.
So in closing, I'm going to ask you the question that I ask most of my guests. What are the ADHD traits that you feel are responsible for your success?
My persistence is definitely the one that comes first and foremost in my mind. And then also being compassionate, looking at the person that's in front of me first is something that I've always made. It's got to be the most important thing. We can't just look at this label that we know we read on paper about a student, a client, a patient. It's all about seeing the person first. Absolutely. And then me just being spontaneous and leaning in and trying to find out more about other people.
Love it. I love it. So if people want to know more about you, they want to find you, where do they do that? What can you tell us?
Absolutely. You can email me at speakingofsteph@gmail.com, Steph with a PH. And you can follow me on Instagram at bitesizedkids. You can also follow me on LinkedIn. I do have a feeding newsletter that I'm pretty proud of called the Bite Size Bulletin. And my handle on LinkedIn is I am Stephanie.
I am Stephanie is Stephanie, right?
Yep.
Stephanie, it was such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Tracy, and congratulations on all the things you've accomplished for our community. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you. So, That's what I have for you for this week. If you like this episode with Stephanie, please let us know by leaving a review. Our goal, you know it is, to change the conversation around ADHD, helping as many women as we possibly can learn how their ADHD brains work so that they too may discover their amazing strengths. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. Don't forget to go order the book, ADHDforsmartwomen.com/book.
You've been listening to the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. Join us at ADHDforsmartwomen.com, where you can find more information on my new book, ADHD for Smartass Women, and my patented Your ADHD Brain is A-OK system to help you get unstuck and fall in love with your brilliant brain.
Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. And don't forget to sign up for our free live virtual training, 3 days to fall in love with your ADHD brain, starting on April 15th at spyhappy.me/3days. I'm telling you, it's life-changing.